Can you say hello to Jeffrey Bielshin? I forgot where you're from, sorry, but...
Albany, New York.
Ah, okay. The microphone doesn't...
Hello? Hello? It's on. It's
yeah,
red.
It's on. Okay, now it's working. Yeah, fine.
Can everybody hear me?
Yeah, great. So, I'm looking really forward to having a multimedia-enriched presentation on avoiding my critical errors migrating to Samba. Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Unfortunately, although I am PowerBook enabled, I do not have the beautiful presentation package that Jean-Baptiste showed yesterday. So, at any rate, a lot to talk about. These are indeed very exciting times for open source standards-based software. This is how I always refer to it. And one of the reasons for that is because Microsoft has its own sets of situations. And we'll talk a little bit about how we can leverage that for our own benefit. First of all, if Samba works so well, and it does, what constitutes a critical error? In my actual working with this, one of the things that I found is that a lot of the critical errors aren't what you might suspect. There's a lot of human issues, a lot of human relationship issues between we as computer professionals, managers especially, and our user base. And unless you're in a unique situation where you are your own administrator and your own user, you have to discuss and think about these other things. A successful migration is a great thing, and it's one of the most satisfying work experiences building something great. Personally, I'm a builder. I enjoy building things. I'm not a sculptor, but I do like to build networks, work groups, and things that work. And migrating away from Windows successfully is great because Microsoft does hold all the cards. They have kept all these keys hidden. And thank you for the Samba team for unearthing these things. So you have to ask yourself, what are you getting yourself into? In what I have found in an average Windows saturated environment, you wind up being the responsible open source advocate. And what that means is you have to combat fear and ignorance in your own particular workplace. And where does that fear and ignorance come from? Redmond, Washington. Okay? And what we need to provide is rational advocacy of a demonstrably better solution. It's better technically, and right now, this is our big opportunity, it's better economically. Microsoft is in the unenviable position of a monopolist looking to leverage that position in an environment where nobody wants to spend any money, in an environment where everybody has lots of money and they can spend it any way they want. Their monopoly position is something that they can leverage, and that's one of their trouble spots. You want to be the owner, whether you're a team leader or whether you are in situations that I have found myself the only administrator doing this. You have to be the owner. One of the things that managers are very adept at is taking credit for your work but never owning it. So that way they get the credit. But one of the things that can happen is you will get the blame, especially if it's your idea. However, you still need to be the owner. You need to be knowledgeable. You need to know what you're doing, okay, not just in terms of compiling software and writing smb.conf. You have to have kind of a larger look at this. You want to be prepared to defend your work. I don't know what kind of environment you work in, whether it's openly hostile to change, but you need to think about having a proactive defense. For what it is you're about to do. And that gets into issues about managerial perceptions. You need to be decisive. Okay. However, you do not want to act capriciously or precipitously. You don't want to try to do the cutover Friday afternoon when you haven't done any kind of planning. Okay. A couple of things you absolutely have to fight against. You have to fight the inertia from the management and user-driven inertia. This is their own built-in resistance to change, okay? As someone who's developed databases in the past, you absolutely, in your migration, you have got to contain lateral moves. You cannot fall into a scenario where you're going to be promising features from this migration other than what's going to happen after the migration is everything's going to work the way it did before, okay? You cannot say, and then we're going to have all these other things, because the lateral moves will kill you, and they will keep you from attaining your goal. What is your goal? The ultimate goal would be to eliminate Microsoft back-end products, okay? Get rid of them on the back end. There are those of us who like to say, on the back end, Microsoft products have no reason to live, okay? However, that is somewhat a precipitous jump, even for an adventurous organization, so you may have to ratchet your enthusiasm down, and you may have to accept that it's likely you're going to reduce dependency upon Microsoft back-end products, and that's still a really good thing. Okay, one of the things you have to be able to do is manage the management you are up against, especially if you're in an adversarial environment. Okay, what they want this to be seamless. They want no downtime, no problems. They want minimal funding changes. Okay, and one of the personal items, they want to distinguish themselves among other managers. So somewhere, if you can provide the first three, and you're definitely having the capability of minimizing their funding hit, especially with the onerous licensing that Microsoft is proposing to leverage on everybody, to distinguish themselves among other managers is an actual big deal. This is how they get noticed. This is how they get advancement, okay, unless their parents own the company. All right. Understanding how they think. They tend to be reductionist thinkers. They prefer single cause and effect models. I have this simple thing, and if I change this, something's going to happen. Life is not like that. They tend to have a spreadsheet mentality, which plays into the first two, because spreadsheets are wonderful tools for backing up that exact set of mentalities. Okay? They are typically not technically proficient, and therefore the benefits of what you're about to do are not immediately apparent to them. And typically they've never done any kind of software development, and even though I'm not somebody who can code, okay, I have done some software development, but typically managers have not even done that, so they have little understanding of the development processes. They will be more likely to want lateral moves, lots of extra features during the course of the migration. I guess it's something you have to fight against. Okay? Understanding what they think. This is a quote. I'm sure you have all heard this. Windows just works right out of the box. Okay? It is a selling point. That's kind of true. There are a lot of things in life that are kind of true. This happens to be one of them. I've had the interesting experience of actually having to combat that exact phrase, which is why I put it in quotes. You cannot forget that Microsoft sold Windows to management. They sold it well at a time when Novell Network completely dominated. All right, managers were heavily targeted by the Microsoft hype machine, especially the It Just Works right out of the box. Therefore, the benefits of what we're about to do are not immediately apparent. We're threatening to undo the very safe and secure scenario. You will have to do a lot of myth and misperception dispelling. Isn't Unix or Linux proprietary? Okay, they've heard of commercial Unix. They've probably heard of Solaris. Okay, isn't that proprietary, for crying out loud? You will hear that. Is it compatible with our existing hardware? The main reason for this is that every new version of Windows requires new hardware. If you've ever worked with Windows, that's the fact. If you have an established hardware base, the next new version of Windows will bury it. Okay? That's just it. All right? That doesn't happen with our operating systems of choice. Okay? Myths and perceptions about Samba. I've heard it doesn't work in certain situations. Okay? This, they will pull out an article about version 0.00 something of Samba that, you know, somebody dug up and passed to them. Okay? Well, this very old report is something they're going to hang on to. Okay? Also, I've heard it's insecure. They've heard of plain text passwords. They've heard of people sniffing the wire and grabbing passwords. They're probably referring to this. Okay? One of the other things, as the rational advocate, you have to be able to come up against their misperceptions about the word free, because if it has no cost, it must have no worth, because they calculate value in very simple monetary terms. All right, about open source specifically, it must not have any good quality control with so many disconnected people. Okay, this shows their little understanding of the internet development possibilities. there is a thought pattern in the pro-Microsoft camp that because everybody that does work for Microsoft is part of Microsoft, that somehow that's better than the brilliant people that are available around the world. Okay, managing users, understanding what they want, the same three things that the managers are looking for: seamlessness, no downtime, no problems. They have their job to do. You will have occasional users that really think it's cool that what you're doing, but that's typically, unless they're administrators that are helping you, you know, their job is to actually use the IT resources that you provide. Okay. One of the caveats: beware, a quiet user is not necessarily a contented user. Users frequently will try to find ways to circumvent what you do. Anybody have a user like that in your group that thinks they know at least as much as you do, if not more? They read an article once, and suddenly, you know, that vaults them. One of the things we have to do as admins is periodically interview the user base, the users and the managers, to stay current with what they're doing and to try to ensure that they're not end-running what you're trying to do. Run some tests on your own, okay? Troubleshooting your Windows infrastructure up front. Well, if we're going to get rid of the Windows infrastructure, why are we troubleshooting it up front? Okay. The reason is because most people don't really understand what goes into the IT infrastructure. Things may have been broken for weeks or months, and they haven't realized. Now, obviously, if the executive can't print their Christmas cards or their holiday cards on the corporate printer, they're going to notice that right away. Okay. However, there are other subtle things that happen. Directory replication between domain controllers. If you're not careful, there can be issues with that not happening. And depending on the size and the complexity of your network, if it's not too complex, you might find that this is a problem that has just slipped by. So that's why we want to test our Windows infrastructure before, because there's a lot of client-side things that are important. One of the things that I had to find out the hard way is to get rid of the auto-negotiate network speed. Always set it to the maximum speed. You can argue one way or the other. I've been in environments where I have controlled the network as well as the systems on the network. I've been in environments where I do not control the network and I don't have access to the network. I want to force network hardware issues that could jeopardize the success of my migration. I want to force them to the surface up front. Okay? Time. Time is very important. Anybody ever have domain controllers and end-user machines mysteriously have these weird problems, and you find out that time on those machines is just way off from reality. Okay, one of the known problems with Microsoft stuff is that it is time critical, certain replications and issues between the workstations and the servers. Okay, browsing will not work properly if the time is far enough off. Okay, so if your users have, in your Windows environment, have the proper privileges, you can just run a nettime set command as part of their login script. However, if they don't have the right privileges, you're going to want to consider having a time service or an at process on their Windows box to manage time. Make sure that NetBIOS is running over TCP/IP. It's been the default behavior for years. It's an option in Windows XP. You have to discreetly set this. When you're troubleshooting issues and your share is not available from a simple NetBIOS name search, try the fully qualified host name. Try the IP address. See if that works. These are simple tools. LMHost is extremely valuable, especially for preload entries. Okay. As you take a look at what you're about to do, you want to make sure that all your WINT service is happening at servers, and you want to restrict your elections for browsing services at the server level. You want to make sure that none of your workstations are trying to do the maintain browser list. Hunt this registry key down and set it to no. You'd be amazed at how much network bandwidth can get caught up as everybody turns their machines on in the morning, especially. You want to be completely aware of the kind of sharing that is going on in your workplace, especially if you have 9X clients and they're doing their own kinds of shares, and you want to try to grab that share space onto your servers. Before you do your migration, you want to absolutely make sure that if you do not manage the network yourself, that there's not about to be a dramatic change in the networking infrastructure. Okay? You want to make sure that you inventory your servers, have your BIOS updates and patches at the hardware level ready to go and done before you migrate. As you plan your operating system, are you going to run commercially Unix? Are you going to run something open source? My experience is not with Linux. My experience is on the BSD frontier. So that's where I've cut my teeth doing this. Same thing with your clients. Make sure that you know what's going on with them and make sure they are updated as well. The last thing that you want to have is an issue that has nothing to do with your migration but has something to do on the client side especially. Okay? When it comes to your user requirements, you have to absolutely maintain your migration focus. That's what you're about to do. You're about to migrate. That's it. Okay? Your job is to migrate this structure out of a Windows base into something much better that's going to have unbelievable uptime, security, and all the great things. And that's it. That's what we want. We're not going to tack anything else on. We're going to plan how we're going to authenticate, whether we're going to be Unix native, whether we're going to try to run domain controllers. There's been a lot of talk already about the different ways of doing the kind of authentication, plain text or encrypted. This I kind of put in as kind of an aside. Because you have a full test lab and lots of time, do lots of testing. Everybody have a full test lab and lots of time? Congratulations to a couple of you that are doing that. I don't think any of us do. It's one of those hardships we have to work under. Okay, get your server up and running. One of the issues is that you install and configure your operating system, make a backup immediately, make sure it works, make sure that your server as configured is going to survive rebootability. One of the best parts about Unix and its derivatives is you don't have to reboot it all the time. It also means that if you're not careful in your configuration and you manually set things but forget to ensure that it's going to survive a reboot and then don't test the reboot, suddenly, will it work today? And we had a power drop and even the battery backup went and none of my services are running. So we want to make sure that it survives that. Install our software, configure, do a backup of that. Make sure these things work. Okay. Same thing with our Samba daemons. Run them as daemons. Make sure that they will survive reboot. Not everybody that writes a packaged installation includes the automatic reboot capabilities or survivability. Okay, my own particular bias for SMB.com is to configure it by hand, maintain it, and tune it by hand. Okay, I like hands-on things. One of the reasons I don't like Windows is that sense that you click something here, something I don't understand because I didn't have anything to do with it happens, and something comes out there. I don't like that kind of black box nature. So personally, I like to do things by hand. That's one, I think, one of the real drawing points of Unix itself. Resist the temptation to over-engineer your SMB.conf. You want to strive for a minimum configuration file. Remember, what is it you're trying to do? You're trying to migrate. Okay? What do I have? How does it work? How am I going to get that functionality out of my SMB.conf? Okay, that's what I want. I can add features later. Okay? All right, global. Keep it simple. I'm sure everybody's familiar with these. Have a NetBIOS name, your string, your work group. If you're going to be, I like to have a preferred master, security user, keep the log levels modest. For the home directories, I don't like browsable home directories. Obviously, we want our users to be able to write their files to their home directories and to have a modest create mask. When we create our non-home directory services, okay, I have a comment. Generally, you may want to have them browse to these, have valid users. One of the issues that you can get caught if you forget the at sign in front of the group name and then you wonder why nobody in the group can get access to it, that's your fault. You forgot the at sign. Browsable, writable, modest, create mask. One of the things that I would argue for is that we want to treat this like a software development effort, even if we're not actually software developers ourselves. We want to document what are religiously our initial configuration, what our changes are, and what the rationale is. Okay. Anybody get a call from a user that has a problem, and you make a change for that user, and then X amount of time passes, and suddenly maybe you're not reviewing it, but I have another user with a different problem someplace else. Well, how did this happen? What's the rationale? Okay. When we have our SMB.conf's out there, whether we have one monolithic server or whether we have a range of servers, we want to consider creating a template. What is the way that we do SMB.conf in our infrastructure? We want to avoid reinventing the wheel. Okay? Have we intentionally said we're going to have a standard up front? We want to have a standard SMB.conf, or have we inadvertently developed a set of standards because we're tired of certain issues within our development effort for our migration? So definitely think about creating a template. Think also about creating a repository of your SMB.conf files and periodically plan to review them, not necessarily just because you want to make sure you're up to date with what it is your users are asking you. But also you want to see how, because you've documented everything you've done so religiously, you want to be able to review why you did what you did. When we do logging, we want to keep it minimum on the day-to-day level, and we want to resort to advanced logging only if we have serious problems and we need to see something more than just the basic log data. We want to choose a reasonable file size, and we want to make sure that we don't set the file size to zero, because rather than setting it to zero length, we're setting it to what? We're setting it to an infinite length. Okay, it doesn't have a boundary. Okay, one of the things that is easy to forget is the wonderful TestParm program that can do things like flag when I typed valud UD users instead of ID. And I wonder why nobody can connect, and I forgot to do this. It happened. Okay. That's why I mention it. Okay. We want to make sure that we look to see the other parts of the results from test parm, that the defaults, what are currently our defaults, things that we may want to think about changing later on, test parm can give us that. All right. We want to document what the expectations are. It's easier to do this as a checklist because there's so many different possibilities. And that way, if we can check off what we're doing in a very stepwise fashion, that can be a great assistance. We need to religiously document what the existing server configuration is. Remember, we want to troubleshoot all of our Windows problems that our clients have with our servers and our servers have between themselves up front. And then we want to document everything that works. Okay, I'm a big proponent of backups. We want to back this thing up, okay, everything in our Windows IT infrastructure, and we want to document what we've backed up. One of the great resource kit tools is AddUsers. It can generate text file output about the state of our users and groups, and we can work with the data in that text file output, and we can create our scripts to create our users. Well, that's one tool. Migration. Our file transfer, we want to make sure it happens as quickly as possible. The different ways we want to consider doing it or not consider doing it, I've not had really good success using Explorer for migrations. It's been awful, especially I had to learn the hard way about starting a move process where there's been some cross-platform, some Macintosh incursion in the file space. The Macintosh, as wonderful as it is, especially the older pre-OS X versions of the Macintosh operating system, could very easily introduce some very odd file names specifically that even with Macintosh compatibility on, you can have issues with those. The real problem, other than it can be slow, is that it's difficult to reinitiate the move. You can't start it from scratch because you've moved part of it. When you do have your inevitable errors, you can't just start the whole thing from scratch. You've got it partially done, and you will be unable, most importantly, if something tragic happens, to redeploy the Windows IT infrastructure that you're trying to replace if there are issues. Copying is a little bit better. It's less susceptible to file errors. There still are issues. But the best part about using copy, and I would also argue definitely Xcopy with the zillion switches after it, with Xcopy especially, the output can be redirected for a file for your perusal later. It's less susceptible to file errors. You can reinitiate the copy, and you'll still be able to, in both these scenarios, to redeploy your IT infrastructure should something happen or something change for you. If you're going to do something like use SCP, for example, using the PSCP package that can run on all versions of Windows, you want to make sure you have, at the very least, the preserve and the recurse, because you definitely want to recurse your directories, and you definitely want to preserve what you can of the attributes, although if you're going to do this as yourself, you become the owner for everything. So that's something that's an onus on you when you're done, is you then have to script, depending on the dramatic nature of what happens to you. You have to alter the owner and group when it's complete, because you are the owner, you've got the group. Once you have it...
Are you ready to take remarks in between?
Excuse me?
There was.
I'm sorry.
Have you used Xcopy? Xcopy minus O and minus...
Yeah.
O,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's... I'm just trying to...
Has anybody used Xcopy? That's supposed to also transfer the ACLs? As far as somebody...
Yeah, no, I've heard of that. I've never actually successfully used it. I may have used an old version a long time ago, so I'd have to take feedback on that. Yes? Okay.
The remark was you can also use rsync. There's Windows binaries for that.
Cool. Okay, our file transfer is complete. We want to have a backup. We want to make sure that we have a backup of this new thing that we have. We don't want to let the backup lapse and have to fall back to the Windows IT infrastructure that we're trying to get away from in the first place. We want to do some pre-cutover testing, cut the servers over. And then once we've cut the servers over and we've taken the other servers offline, we want to make sure all of that works. One of the big questions is, when can we recycle the Windows servers? That's probably the most interesting question, because you're going to want to, because having an entire infrastructure just sitting doing nothing is a waste of resources. And remember, one of the things we've sold to management is we've sold very dollars and cents, commonsensical use of our IT infrastructure and all of its assets. Once the migration proves itself with the people, we can do the testing that we want, but we're still not the users. Okay, we know what we're looking for. We need to hear back from the users and the managers of those users to make sure that what we've provided them is definitely up to snuff. And then there's a lot of different things that we can hear that may or may not have anything to do with our actual cutover. If people are aware that you're about to do a cutover and you do the cutover, they're going to be more sensitive to things that may have been problems all along that they just didn't realize. Obviously, they're going to complain if they can't see their server, and there can be a variety of reasons for that within this local subnet or across subnets, and that depends on other infrastructure issues, especially the networking infrastructure. There's the standard series of tests. Did you kick the cable out? You'd be surprised how many people don't plug their laptop in on Monday morning and then want to know why they can't see the server. We may have to troubleshoot TCP/IP NetBIOS-related issues for those. For remote network access, has a firewall gone up in the intervening time that you weren't aware of? Hopefully not. But if one does come on, if they told you that they weren't going to cut over to a firewall until, 3 weeks from yesterday, and so they moved the schedule up and didn't tell you, suddenly your remote users, if they didn't take care to allow the ports that you need, suddenly they're locked out, and it's at the firewall that they're locked out. If they did do that and they did take care of your users, did you, in your deployment of your SMB.conf, play around with hosts allowed, hosts denied all. If you have users that work from home, Did they make a change to their own firewall in response to something they heard or read to prevent the spread of viruses and other bad things from their Windows system? Did they block outgoing traffic? Or again, if they did not, did you do anything with the host allowed denied settings? Okay. Just to wind this up, I can't access my files anymore is a complaint. Is there something that you did in the directory permissions for their home directory, if that's what they're having a problem with, or in a non-home directory, a shared space? Did you get the create mask appropriate for what it was that they needed? And then my files are corrupted. This is something I'm hearing more about with Mac OS 10 and its SMB client. From my reading, from what I've seen, it's corrupting specific kinds of file types from Adobe, from Quark. Anybody else seeing or hearing this? You may want to consider running NetAtalk to support AppleTalk and have them connect through AppleTalk if they can, rather than running the SMB client, since that appears to be the source of some of their problems. Yes?
Is that the Apple 6 file system client, or Sandra's SMB client, little SMB client utility? Or?
No, it's bundled with OS 10. That's how I've read it. I haven't had this as a problem, and I have a cross-platform environment. However, I don't have very many OS 10 users, and they are not using the kinds of files that I've read the reports for. So I'm not anything like an authority on the answer to this, but from what I've seen, it appears that it has to do with the Mac OS 10 SMB client. That's where people are leaning. That's why I make that recommendation. If you have that as an environmental consideration, you may want to consider running NetAtalk with your operating system. Yes?
Actually, I got reports of that only from users who were mixing different products to test their files. So, for example, using Bake and SMBFS Bake at the same time, which is the best method of corrupting your resource core.
Okay.
But as long as they are sticking with one product and not copying some things with one product and some things with the other, it's quite okay.
Okay,
so
cool.
It's rather user education than troubleshooting.
All right, cool. Well, it's cool that I can learn that because...
Did anybody not understand what he said?
Okay.
So, just want to make sure that everybody can hear without the microphone.
Yeah. I'm done.
So you're done. Are there any questions? So then, many thanks for giving us a good list of things that you have to make yourself aware of when going to migrate something. In my impression, it's always important really to have something like a checklist that you can go back and you're sure that you have everything done. And yeah, thanks for the presentation, Jeffrey. Now we will have a talk by Andrew Bartlett and Simo Sorcher, and to me this is probably, yeah. I'm not really sure what to expect. Is anybody out here sitting on Samba Technical IRC channel from time to time? Okay, a few. There has been some kind of controversy about some internal design things in Samba, especially how do we handle the additional complication that we have over Windows. The main problem. One of the problems we currently have is there is a user sid, but I don't want to take anything from your talk. There's a user sid in Windows NT. We have to handle that. And the thing that Windows NT does not have is this nasty little thing, Unix UID, numeric UID, and username in that way. We use it under Unix, and group IDs and all that stuff. And you got the microphone? And Andrew Bartlett and Simo are on the way of designing, and I'm not sure how far they got until now, a way to get rid of that mess that Samba currently has in that area.